it's another tricky issue.
You know, I get why they did this today. What are you actually doing other than just running your mouth?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Welcome to it. Thursday edition begins. Joining us from the Morning Rush at CFRA in Ottawa, it's Bill Carroll. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
From the pole position right here on News Talk 1010, my buddy John Pohl joins as well. Hey, John.
G'day, g'day.
And political reporter at the Globe and Mail, Marika Walsh. Hey, Marika.
Hi, Jay.
Thank you all so much for being here today. Lots to talk about, including this announcement from the province.
Yeah, so today the provincial education minister has once again had a press conference to announce something, and it's a cell phone ban.
Busy guy this week,
which I think will be very interesting to see. It's not going to be implemented until November, but they are now banning cell phones in classrooms across Ontario. This is what he had to say.
We don't want students using their cell phones or other technology if it isn't for learning. That is foundational to the focus of these kids. And given the results of EQAO, I think there's now more than ever a greater impetus, a greater drive to enforce it.
So, Bill, you have kids. Do you think this is going to work?
We just had the conversation an hour ago. School starts on Tuesday. And when school starts, all of your electronic equipment will be brought to our bedroom to be charged. You don't trust us. That's correct. I barely trust myself to have the maturity not to look at that damn phone, right? It's ever present, and it takes a lot more discipline than I have most times to put it down and go to sleep. They can't be trusted with it at home. They cannot be trusted with it at school. I think it's a great attempt. I'm all for it. I'm not sure it's going to work. Somehow my kids managed to be in a school where they really don't have much cell service. And I still get texts from them because they use the computer at school to access their accounts. So they figure it out, and they're still going to be using it a whole lot. But yeah, the less they're on their phones during the school day, the better it is.
Well, there we go. What about you, John? You think this is a smart political move? Do you think this is going to work?
I think it's a great idea. I don't know if it's going to work. I can tell you my 15-year-old son and his buddies often convene in our kitchen and talk about how much Fortnite they're watching or YouTube videos they're watching during class. So while I certainly understand these devices can be used as an important tool for learning, I think in a lot of cases they're not. In New York State, they are actually issuing those bags, like some entertainers make people put their cell phones in now, where each kid gets a bag. It gets closed, it locks automatically, and at the end of the day, they get the code that will unlock the bag. They can still carry their cell phone around with them, but they can't use it. I think that's a good idea, and I still think my idea, which is the best, is set up the Wi-Fi in the school, and the better your grades, the better access to Wi-Fi you get. You got crappy grades, you get dial-up.
Wow.
I think kids will learn pretty quick.
So I guess
they like their Wi-Fi.
If I was back in high school today, I guess that would make me, I'm 2G.
You have a typewriter.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
Marika, you watched Queen's Park very closely. I'm just want to ask you, what do you make of the fact that we've seen the education minister out basically every day this week and, you know, making, I think, relatively popular or well-thought-out announcements?
I think it goes back to why they had that cabinet shuffle, right? They put their strongest communicators up near the hottest files. And I think that is what we are seeing this week with Stephen Lecce, and I think that is a sign of what's to come in the months ahead. I mean, we saw even with Jamie Wallace being announced today as formally as the permanent chief of staff, lots of people on Twitter are saying, you know, we've seen now a tone change from this government. I also think it's important to note this was actually an election promise from the Ford government from Premier Ford during the election campaign. So they're also making good on an election promise that I think is relatively popular among parents.
What about you, Jay?
Nope. Oh, that's okay. I'm kind of I talked about earlier this afternoon. I didn't get a lot of time to actually explain myself. But yeah, I wonder if that even goes far enough, that ban, because it is really hard to enforce. I'm kind of with John on the whole bags thing. I think if you completely have it out of mind and you completely have it zipped up, or to Bill's point where they stay at home, I think that's the way that it should work, and it should come from parents first. But one of the great interesting takeaways from one of our callers this afternoon was, you know, that this is just as big a problem with teachers as it is with students. Teachers are on their phones, are on their phones just as much. People calling at 7-10-10 saying, I just had a meeting with a principal and a vice principal. I spoke primarily to the principal because the VP was on their cell phone during the entire meeting. So it's going to be really interesting to see just how much it gets enforced because the people doing the enforcing don't necessarily want to self-enforce themselves when it comes to their cell phones.
Well said. You move up from typewriter to 2G.
Thank you, Bill. New report today urging the provincial and local governments in Ontario to do more to attract immigrants to regions other than the GTA. The Conference Board of Canada says that 77% of newcomers to the province currently settle in the Greater Toronto Area, providing an economic boon and putting a lot of pressure on local infrastructure and social supports. Amanda pulled some really interesting stats today. We're not the only city where people come to the urban center when they immigrate. It happens in Vancouver. It happens in Montreal. It happens in Winnipeg. Another interesting stat that was a takeaway for us, by 2035, it's projected that 100% of new population growth will be attributed to immigrants. So there's really a lot to work with here, Bill. And, you know, this lays out some suggestions, but, I mean, clearly we need to find something, right?
Please not Timmins. Please don't send me to Timmins. I don't think you can tell people Sudbury? Where to stay, especially Sudbury. Not in the long, yeah, or Sudbury. Whew. Isn't that where they did the fake moon landings? But, you know, I do think we need to encourage it. I do. It's, you know, we have the same problem with doctors, right? Getting doctors to go out and work in the outlying areas. Everybody wants to be in the big city with all the sports teams and all the sexiness and all the fun. That's where people are attracted to, completely understandably. It's also when you're new to the country where maybe some people from your other country came before you. And that's surprisingly attractive. When I moved to the U.S., I woke up one day and realized I'm only hanging out with Canadians while I'm down here. Wow, I'm that immigrant now. Look at me. So I get all of that, but we have to do it. We cannot. Toronto is bursting at the seams, and a lot of other cities could use the growth economically as well. And I think it'd be a good thing. And also kind of nice maybe to see some people who don't all look like me here in Ottawa. It's getting better, but it's a little white here.
Marika, do you think it would be possible to incentivize people, like to maybe say, you know what, we can give you a housing break or we can give you a funding break or relocation fees if you will go to a Timmins, if you will go to a Saskatoon?
Yeah, I think that governments can consider all of those things. I mean, they can also, and I'm not sure how much this already happens, but they can also look at, in some ways, creating quotas, right? We already have quotas for the province, so can they require that certain regions get certain allotments of immigrants? That's certainly something that we saw, again, in the last provincial election campaign. That was one of the issues that northern communities were raising, that they do want to attract more immigrants, but they need the government's help to facilitate that.
John Paul?
It's so funny. When I was in high school in Wallaceburg, Ontario, I remember us, we were sitting in the cafeteria and I said, look, I love the idea of immigration, which I'm surprised we were talking about in high school. I said, I love the idea of immigration. What if we made it so, like, when you get here, you have to go 3 years and you have to go to a city of our choice because we want to make sure the population stays out of our big centers because we want to, otherwise that's what everyone's going to go. And of course, everyone said, can't do that. That's against human rights.
Right.
So you're probably right. But I think if you incentivize them, that's one thing. I think the other side is, I think there should be a really good effort of incentivizing people in big cities to leave and go to small towns, because to Bill's point, there are a lot of people, they go to a specific place because that's where their family is, and maybe if some of their family starts to move to, whether it be a London or a Chatham or an Owen Sound, when more people come over, they go, oh, well, I'm going to go to Owen Sound because that's where my brother and sister are. So I think it's a two-prong issue we need to deal with.
Andrew Scheer came out today with a press conference to respond to the Liberals who have been dredging up old videos of him from 2005, stating where he claimed that same-sex couples should not be married because they could not, quote, commit to the natural procreation of children. He says today those not maybe doesn't disavow it entirely, but he sort of said, this is not what I think now.
My personal views are that every single Canadian has the same equality rights under the law, and I will continue to uphold that. And I think it's so hypocritical for the Liberals to reach back 15 years ago to try to divide Canadians on an issue that is settled, that Canadians know is not going to be revisited, in a desperate attempt to distract from their failures and their scandals.
So, Bill, do you think this press conference today was a smart move in order to kind of address the issue, or do you think it just dredges it up again for Scheer?
Sometime in the mid-1970s. There was an election campaign on. I was a teenager in high school, and I went to work on the campaign of a man named Ron Collister, an old newspaper guy from the Telegraph and the Sun. And my NDP supporting dad was horrified that, don't tell me you're a Tory or Bell. He could not believe it. I don't think that I've ever voted anything but conservative in a federal election. I can't vote conservative in this federal election. I watched that man today, and I gave up all hope. I mean, as much as I despise our current prime minister, and I don't have the words to explain how much I dislike him and want him to be brought down, I can't let a man who can barely say out loud that he would support a law that he clearly does not believe in. He's had no change of mind about that. And he doesn't have to. Good for him. That's his religious belief. I wish I shared that kind of conviction. But at the same time, you know, leaving open the idea of an open vote maybe on abortion, a woman's right to make her choice about what's right for her body. And this has got, you know, he said the government wouldn't let that happen. But nothing about him tells me he's the man who would stand up for those rights that are already entrenched in law, and I can't have it. I want the religious right out of this party once and for all. I am done with them.
Tough words. John, did he convince you today, or are you with Bill?
I'm with Bill. I don't believe a lot of what Andrew Scheer says, and which I don't believe a lot of what the Prime Minister says, so at least they have that in common.
They do.
That said, I thought the strategy was a good one in the sense that I don't think they accomplished it, but the idea of coming out and saying, hey, look, you can take videos of people from a long time ago, comedians, TV shows that don't stand the test of time today, and people do change. And I think that is a fair point to make, that, look, people do make, like, if you found a video of me when I was in high school, I probably said things I shouldn't have said.
Asked if he's changed, he can't say that's it. The thing. He's not changed, right?
That's the problem, is that he didn't deliver the strong point, which is, look, this is how I firmly stand today, so rest assured, those videos are old, but I've grown as a person. He didn't deliver that, so it was kind of a dud for
me. It really feels like a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marika, you watch Ottawa closely. Do you think that the Liberals are still going to pound him with this, or do you think that that was a way of sort of addressing and saying, I'd like to move on?
I think that the Liberals see their opening here for several reasons. The first one is that they haven't actually clarified whether or not, you know, what this will actually mean in practice in the House of Commons. So they say all MPs will have a free vote on abortion and matters of conscience. And then at the same time, they say Scheer will expect his cabinet to vote with him, but they don't use the words that we use in Parliament to actually mean whipped vote or a free vote. And by not using those words to be clear, it always leaves it open. And because of that, I think that they will be able to continue to hound Scheer. Whether it actually works, I'm not convinced of. It's a political strategy that the Liberals are clearly taping. I don't know that the last few campaigns that we've seen in Canada shows that these kinds of attacks actually sway voters. But I think it really does raise questions for Scheer. He did not, for example, at all put any distance between some of the language he used in 2005. So he said again today he'll uphold the law as it stands, but he didn't say, and he was given the chance to say, that he regrets, you know, using the analogy of a dog's tail and legs, for example, to talk about same-sex marriage. And so
that would have been easy one to take back, wouldn't it?
I think because of that, it will leave that opening for the Liberals.
Marika Walsh, Bill Carroll, and John Pohl, thank you all so much. A side note, Bill, if you ever decide to do a podcast where you faithfully recreate anecdotes from your childhood where you do your dad's voice, let me know, because I'm going to be your first subscriber.
What would you pay for that?
Best question of the day.
I'm hoping for the Bell discount. You all have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much.